we are told that time can heal all wounds. And it's amazing how time can change our perception of things. Case in point, last year I was driving somewhere with my oldest son Jacob, and along the side of the road was a 1974 Nova for sale, yellow at that. And Jacob looked over at me and said, "Dad, that's a pretty cool car, isn't it?" And I said, "Whatever you say, Jacob." This past summer, we had traveled to the beach, to Moorhead City, and after we had finished our outing on the water, we were getting ready to head back to my sister's house. And there in one of the car lots was a 1977 Ford station wagon, green with wood panels. Everything in that car was green. In the back of that station wagon was that third seat, the one that all the kids wanted to sit in. And there on the window was a piece of paper tape that said, "Air conditioning works great." I mean, I thought it would be the perfect preacher man mobile. But you know, it's funny because 30-some years ago, as a 16-year-old, I don't think I would have found that car to be quite so cool as I did now. And even to attest to what time can do, now people even think that Ford Pintos were cool. So indeed, time has a way of working its magic. And when I was invited to be here, immediately I started thinking about this whole time thing. And I found myself taken back to an evening probably 13, 14 years ago where we were meeting across the street. And I don't know if it was a family night. I don't know if it was some special occasion, a fundraising event or what. But what I remember about it is that Mr. Dayton Smith brought out his 8mm film. And after we had eaten, we sat there and we watched the footage. And it was different footage than what we watched today. But I can remember watching it and seeing how good everyone looked. You know, all the women had their bonnets on and their gloves, white gloves. And the men had their suits and their fedoras like we saw in the images today. And I thought to myself, goodness, how wonderful they all look. Now, folks, obviously, if I'm someone that will stop on the side of the road and look at a 1977 Ford station wagon, I'm into retro. And the truth is, I love old stuff. I love that which has character. And talking about that old footage and watching it today, I mean, you know, everyone looked like movie stars. You know, there was a certain class, a certain prestige. Indeed, it was something outstanding. Now, folks, there's nothing wrong with reminiscing. It's a good thing to look back on occasion and see from whence you have come. Nothing wrong with taking those moments to smile as you think back to the good old days. But the truth of the matter is, we live in a different day today. The world we live in has changed forever. The homes we live in are different. The cars we drive are different. The clothes we wear are different. In every home now is a computer. I can remember Earl Herring telling me about when he first started working and how the computer he worked on filled up the whole room. And now there are these little compact things. Those black and white televisions that we used to watch. And where I'm from in Coastal Carolina, we had three stations. And three stations only. But now these TVs take up half of our living room walls and they're thinner than a telephone book. And instead of having three stations, they have stations from around the country, if not the world. And of course, we've gone from phonographs to 8-tracks to cassettes to iPods to whatever now is the latest technology. And I'm a dinosaur, so I certainly don't know. Well, folks, having made the determination that we live in a different world, my question is what are we doing differently with the church than we were doing 40, 30, 20 years ago? Someone that loves the old but as someone who also recognizes the need to stay with the new. As a pastor of a church, as a minister of the gospel, my question is, what are we doing to keep it relevant? What are we doing to keep it meaningful? What are we doing to make sure that we speak the language of today? What are we doing to ensure that we continue to influence the generation that lives around us? What are we doing to make sure that we're rocking the world just as Jesus rocked the world over 2,000 years ago? When because of what He did and what He said, we are told that people stood in amazement and questioned, what was this? A new teaching with authority. Well, folks, I hate to be the bearer of bad news on this glorious day in which we live, but we've got a hump to overcome as the modern church. We have to deal with issues in part because of some of what the church has done in the past. Back in an article in 2008 in USA Today, individuals were polled who did not go to church, even on holidays. Of the individuals polled, 72% of these individuals said that they believed in a higher or supreme being. They believed in a God that actually exists. Unfortunately, the same percentage, 72%, also said that the church is full of hypocrites. 44% of those polled agreed with the statement, "Christians get on my nerves." And according to Scott McConnell, who was the associate director of Lifeway Research at the time, when they look at churches, they do not see people living out the faith. So what are we to do? Well, one thing that we are not to do is to compromise that which we are about and that which we are. In yesterday's Wilmington paper, the timeliness of it all is amazing, but there's an article that says, "Churches shorten services to draw in families and young people." Folks, we're to change the culture, not to accommodate the culture. And I believe that if we are presenting worship that is engaging, appealing, that which has substance in it, we don't have to worry about shortening anything, because the people will come and they'll be fed. Folks, at Sharon, I cannot even remember the last time our church got out at 12 o'clock. I love to kid around and tell everybody it's great because we give the Baptists something to talk about. When they ride by and say, "What in the world is that Methodist church doing still going at it at 12:15? I used to apologize for that. I would say, "You know, folks, it's going to be another long one. I'm sorry." Until one day I received a phone call from this gentleman in a church. And this was a gentleman that never says anything. This is a gentleman that's very stoic and very quiet in his manner and his personality. And so when I received a phone call from him, of course, like any good pastor, I assumed the worst. He called on Saturday morning and said, "Preacher, I need to talk to you. Can you meet me at the church?" I just knew that he was going to let me have it. And I just knew that he was going to be the bearer of such news of, you know, "Preacher, we're tired of your mess. We're tired of this. And my wife and I, we're leaving." So obviously I went there with some trepidation. But when I got there, Mr. Donald Bollinger said to me, he says, "Eddie, I don't ever want to hear you apologize again for our services going long. Eddie, this church knows what you're about, and this church knows you. And if they have an issue with time going over, there are other churches that they can attend. Don't you ever apologize again." "Yes, sir, Mr. Donald." "Yes, sir." Folks, we don't need to be in the business of compromising for that which we believe. You see, the good news is today that we have been equipped, we have been prepared, we have been given all the resources we need to be that difference maker in the church in which we live. In John 14, verse 12, we read, "Very truly I tell you, the one who believes in me will also do the works that I do, and in fact will do greater works than these, because I am going to the Father." And then in John 16, verse 7, we read, "Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. It is to your advantage that I go away. For if I do not go away, the Advocate will not come to you. But if I go, I will send him to you." So in other words, my brothers and sisters, we have the power. We have the necessary resources. We have everything we need to be that difference-making church in the world in which we live. But again, I ask you, what are we doing to make a difference? What are we doing to let the world around us know that we really care about them? Because the truth of the matter is, just like the old adage states, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. What are we doing? What are we doing? Yeah, it's funny because part of my time here at Sharon, at Kipling, was spent always worrying if I was going to be able to get from point A to point B. The youth of our church might remember the Green Machine, a 1902, I think it was, Green Suburban. And we took it down to the beach one time on a youth outing. Mr. Harrison and I found a third seat to put in the back, and there we were, drilling holes next to the gas tank to mount that bad seat. And so here we are, going off to Myrtle Beach for a youth retreat, and every time we stopped, a piece would fall off. Daniel Baker, wherever he is, he can attest to it. We had more pieces in the car by the time we got there than we had on the car. My time here at Kipling was when I had that Mercedes Benz. Yeah, baby. Station wagon. I told my mom I was one step away from being a circuit rider. Because instead of a horse, I had this car. The alternator was bad, so the battery would run loose. So every night I had to feed the battery. It leaked in the radiator, so I had to give it water just like you would a horse. Drove that thing around. Go pick up the boys at school. The passenger window wouldn't lower. So when I called, I had to go up there and tell them I was picking up Jacob Hill. I had to stick my head through the sunroof and try to maintain an attitude of coolness when I was doing it. I kept that car until one fateful day when I was on my way to a preacher's meeting, backed up, pulled ahead, and that sunroof that leaked dropped about a gallon of water in my lap, which wouldn't have been so bad had it not landed in my coffee cup, spilling the coffee with the water. I sold that car the next week. But folks, I share that with you today because I think the simple truth is when we get in an automobile, we want to know that it's going to get us where we need to go. When we get in an automobile, we want to be assured of the fact that we'll get to where we're going and get back home safely. We don't want to be left stranded on the side of the road. We don't want to be left looking for a ride home. You know, yesterday, again, the wonderful way God's providential hand is upon us. Yesterday on my way here, they must have had a car show in Wilmington because I kept meeting all these cars on the road. There was like this 57 red and white Chevrolet station wagon. I don't know what it is about station wagons, but I met it, and I had given this guy a ride, and he's in the back seat, and he started doing a running commentary of all the cars that we were meeting and about...